2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls, 801-575-8255. The phone lines are open. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Ton, our next listener says they are getting a Royal Raindrops crabapple next week. Any advice for planting at this time of year?
Just make sure that when you plant it, that it's not buried too deeply. So they should be able to see where the tree is grafted. So there'll be the roots will come up with the trunk, and then you'll see a little bit of a, I don't know what you want to call it, a swelling, or sometimes just a little bit of an offshoot where they grafted the Royal Raindrops part to the roots. And so just make sure that those roots aren't too deep. And then with it being hot, you don't want to overwater it, but I can imagine them in an average soil having to water probably a couple times a week, maybe three times a week, until we start to cool down in August.
Okay. Would this be hold true for any type of tree you're planning
to plant? It would. Royal Raindrops is very adaptable. I've grown them in both the Cache Valley and down in southern Utah County, and they've done just fine. I will say that, as with any tree, that they will want to wrap the trunks in the winter with tree tape just to protect them, because they are susceptible to sun scald that will damage the trunks, but they're very good trees.
Landscaper told me that area where I cut down that big pine tree, it would be a good place for a tricolor beech. My favorite tree. I might actually finally plant
get
tricolor
one and put it
beech.
In.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. So I needed that advice as well. Next person says, if I mow with a bag, will thatch build up and choke the lawn? Without a bag, excuse me.
No, as long as you're not leaving a trail behind you of grass clippings, you are not contributing to the thatch layer of the lawn.
My husband does this all the time, so.
Oh, man, I can mow my yard in about 45 minutes if I don't bag it. If I bag it, it's an hour and a half. And so I'll use the grass clippings in my garden area to hold weeds down and help conserve water, but I can, it's almost 40-50% less time if I don't bag.
And it's helpful to the lawn, especially in a drought.
So if our turf specialist, Kelly Cope, who I was talking about earlier, mentioning that even in drought years, you do need to keep the nutrition up on your lawn. She's also found in her research that if you consistently mulch your clippings back into the lawn, that will replace one fertilization a year.
Wow. Okay, that's significant. Next listener says they're wondering if preen is a good weed killer or preventer for a parking strip that has rocks and a few crabapple trees.
It's as good as any. No weed preventer or no pre-emergent goes after all weeds. And so if they try it and get a lot of seeds germinating, you know, preen's not good for those, and they might want to try a different one the next year. Mm-hmm. But I've had really good luck with preen.
John in Tremonton wants to know how to get rid of those stinking squash bugs.
Sorry.
John, they are really a problem this year.
You have to get on them early. And Sheridan mentioned, and she has a big squash patch, that she has her volunteers going through once a week, searching for the squash bugs and the eggs on the leaves. Now, I can't really send Sheridan's volunteers up to Tremonton, but
darn it, John wants them.
Through late June and July, when the squash are still smaller, that is the critical time that you look for the eggs on the undersides of the leaves and look for the adults and take them out. And if you'll do that, oftentimes in later summer, you don't have the problems.
Okay, he wants to know what to do now, though, Tom.
Permethrin, if it's, we're kind of having to go to the nuclear option, and I hate permethrin because those squash are in bloom, and permethrin can be quite harmful to pollinators. But there's not a lot of sprays out there that will knock out squash bugs, especially when they're adults. And so what you would do is spray in the evening or early morning and just do your best. But I know people that are gardeners that do a lot of this, or it's like a cat scratching on a chalkboard when I say put permethrin out. But that's...
it's your only option.
That's your option
point.
At this point, especially if a lot of monitoring wasn't done earlier.
Next person says they're having trouble with one of their zucchini plants. The fruit is fine, but it goes narrow at the end and then turns yellow and soft, and the fruit is kind of round.
It may be a variety of squash because there are round zucchinis, but it also could be some blossom end rot. And so that happens when we have temperature fluctuations and fluctuations in soil moisture. And to prevent some of that, I would make sure that those are watered 2 to 3 times a week to a depth of at least 6 inches.
Next person says, how long should you water in each spot before moving to the next one on the lawn? That's such a tough question.
Because,
okay, this time of
year.
Okay, just address it that way.
This time of year, if you're using a hose and sprinkler, it's even just widely variable how much water they're putting out. So what I would recommend doing is run the sprinkler. If it's hose end and it's just one of those, what Dave would call a fisheye sprinkler, that have the two holes in it or one hole, I would run it for 15 to 20 minutes. Let it sit for a couple hours after you turn it off, and then let the water soak in. And then go out and stick a screwdriver in the ground and see how deeply it goes. If it goes 6 inches, 9 inches, that 15 to 20 minutes is long enough. But the best I can do is start with a 15 or 20 minute run on those types of sprinklers. And if you're using a gear driven sprinkler or like an impact sprinkler that claps, you know, as it goes around, those you're probably going to need to run for 45 minutes to an hour. Let it sit for a while and then check it. And you may need to increase.
Doug is on the line in Cottonwood Heights. Good morning, Doug. What is your question?
Yes, about 20 years ago, I planted a couple of flowering pears on each side of my driveway, and they both did well, but one of them thought it was a quaking aspen, and it started sending up shoots in the lawn. So last year, I had them taken out and the stumps ground, and I put in a couple of new different type of trees. But now, on the one side, I'm still getting a lot of shoots coming up in the lawn, and I've been spraying them with Weed Be Gone, and that knocks them down, but then some more come up. So how do I stop these shoots coming up in the lawn from the old flowering pear?
Well, it may take a few years of doing this to actually get rid of them. And what I would actually do, are you using a pre-mix, like a ready-to-use Weed Be Gone or a concentrate?
Pre-mix.
Because that's going to be the weakest formulation that they can put together that still does the job. Because, you know, less product means more bottles, more cells. And so what I would do is get a concentrate and then just get a cheap watercolor paintbrush. And when you clip those suckers, just put a little dab. As soon as you cut, dab a little bit of that concentrate on the stump of every sucker, and that should work much more quickly.
Okay, I will try that.
All right. Good luck to you, Doug. Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Tom, just going back to the zucchini for a minute. They're growing a round zucchini for the first time. They're wondering what size are they supposed to be to pick?
Oh, anywhere, probably around softball size or maybe just a bit smaller. What they can do is pick one at that point and then cut it open. And if it has the hard seeds in it, then maybe go to just a little bit smaller. size of a large peach.
So do they taste the same as the other zucchini?
They do. They're just a different shape.
Oh, interesting.
There's another summer squash called Patty Pam that's become quite popular over the last 10 years that looks like almost like a little king's hat. Mm-hmm. And so there's several, I would say newer, that's always relative, but there's lots of newer summer squash becoming more available. And so the Patty Pans, the rounded zucchinis, the rounded yellow squash, there's lots of different variety out there.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Mike, you'll be first up next. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you this morning. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Mike is on the line in Orem. And good morning, Mike. What is your question?
Yes. How long does lavender bloom in the summer?
It should bloom for, depending on the variety, anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks. If you deadhead it, it will oftentimes send out a second flush of blooms, and so you can get another 3 or 4 weeks out of it. But if it left to its own devices, anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks. Did we lose you?
Oh, no, I'm here.
All right. Was there something else you needed to know, Mike?
Now we did lose him.
I'm sorry. Okay, Mike. Well, I hope you can call back if we didn't answer all of your questions. Next listener says they came home from vacation, found that their nectarine tree looks dead. It has some of the fruit on it, but it's withered and there are no leaves left on the tree. Ouch. They're wondering if the tree's lost and if they need to cut it down or if there's a bug or is there anything you think they could do to revive it?
So they came home from vacation. Did they say how
old
the tree
healthy?
Is?
So it was healthy. No, they did not say how old the tree was, but they came home and basically it looks dead.
Well, they're... drought stress would do that if for some reason the sprinkling system failed. Mm-hmm. The other thing that could do it is a vascular wilt disease. And sometimes a tree looks healthy. 2 weeks later, it's dead. I see this really commonly in pears and sometimes in plums, but you'll get vascular wilt disease and the tree just goes down.
So how do they know if they should try to do something to save it or just...
Well, it's late enough in the season that it may or may not re-leaf. They just need to... I wouldn't overwater it. Make sure it's getting the moisture it needs and just be patient. And they can take a knife and scrape the bark on the younger branches to see if it's still green underneath. If it is, I would leave it alone. But if it's brown, then it may be unfortunately lost.
Okay. So when you say take a knife and scratch the branch, be a little more specific because I can just see somebody going out there and just hacking the
thing. Well, you can even use your fingernail, but the newer growth that's less than a year old, the bark on it is relatively thin and tender. And so you can just use your fingernail to scratch it back or on a really shallow angle. Almost parallel to the branch, you can cut into the bark and lift it up and then see if it's green underneath because the conductive tissue that moves nutrients and water back and forth is right under the bark. And if that tissue's green, then the tree is still alive and it may re-leaf.
All right. That's much, much easier for me to picture in my head. Next person wants to know, what can they do about Japanese beetle in corn?
We don't have Japanese beetle here that we know of.
So what do you think they have?
They may have corn earworm. That's our most common pest. And their USU has fact sheets on corn earworm, but there's a certain time of year that when you start to see the silks appear on top of the corn plants that you have to spray every so often. And there's a number of options. But yeah, I would look up USU's fact sheet on corn earworm. It's very specific. If you have corn earworm, you just cut off the edge of the corn that's been fed on. It's usually an inch or so of the ear. And so you still get 85% of the ear and just cut it off and throw it away.
All right. Sarah is asking, when would be the best time to cut down a pine tree? And this one's 30 years old. She's having to do what I've done. And I'm sorry, Sarah, because I was sad after I cut my tree down. Tree's partially dead already. Mine wasn't partially dead. It was my problem. It just had overgrown. It was like encroaching on the house. So when's the best time for her to do this?
If they're just taking it out, anytime. If they're doing it themselves, just make sure that you know the safety procedures. If you're hiring a company, it doesn't matter. Just go ahead and have them remove it.
It's not cheap, but I think it's worth it because it's dangerous to remove a tree.
It can
that's
be.
That large.
You know, there's YouTube is full of videos of people cutting down trees that are just like arborist fails. And you'll see these things falling on their houses and cars and see them knocking over the ladder. And, you know, it's not that I'm telling people to go get a hoot off of watching people's misfortune, but there's a reason
it's
there's
dangerous.
So many videos on YouTube
say that.
About
that's a large
it.
Tree.
Yeah. And an arborist, they're not just somebody in a truck with a chainsaw. They've actually had to go to a lot of schooling and to get certifications to know what they're doing. And so the value of a certified arborist is very high, especially if you have a tree in an area to where the tree could fall over on a fence or a home or a car.
Next listener. Oh, I already asked this round zucchini question. Next person says they bought organic soil mixed with organic topsoil in a brand new garden box. And after planting the plants, they started to see grubs, over 500. They've hand-picked the grubs out. Over time, they're still getting 5 to 10 a day. First of all, that is really strange, isn't it?
Well, I've had a lot of calls this year, and every year we seem to have an insect that is usually in the background, and just you'll see it once in a while, and it
in
just has its year.
In new garden boxes with new soil?
I'm wondering if we somehow sourced organic matter that already had these in there. They're white grubs, but I'm not sure they're the kind that feed on lawns. There's another species of white grub, or what we would call a scarab beetle, called bumbleflower beetle. And the reason it's called that is when it flies, it sounds almost like a huge bumblebee. Mm-hmm. But the beetle usually feeds on organic matter. And sometimes it can get into like overly ripe corn or overly ripe apples. But I think that this bumbleflower beetle has been having a year and we're seeing lots of them.
So what is their best way to get rid of these now?
Just keep pulling them out. Go fishing. They're great fishing bait.
They had 500. That's got quite a time.
Yeah, that's a lot. And When I hear stuff like that, I'm wondering, again, that wherever the organic matter was sourced from, if there was a species of scarab beetle where eggs were laid in the compost pile that the soils were made from, and then those eggs were then hatched in the bags, and because they feed on organic matter, I mean, you've just basically given birth in a golden corral and for these beetles, and they're just happy to be in there, you know, because they have a ready-made food source. And so just pull them out, throw them out, take them fishing, whatever you want to do.
We have just 3 minutes before the top of the hour news, but I want to get to Cindy before we get there. Cindy's in Linden. Good morning, Cindy. What is your question?
Good morning. I'm the one that texted about the Japanese beetle in corn.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have a worm in my corn. It is a little teeny black bugs, tons of them, and they have like a kind of a bronze copper little piece of their body. I'm just wondering, is that what is it?
If it's not what Japanese damage beetle, are they doing to the corn?
They're actually eating it. They are eating it, making it brown.
So are they eating the leaves or the ears of corn?
They're eating the ears of corn.
Okay, so I suspect you have what's called corn flea beetle. And
what is it?
Corn flea beetle.
Okay.
And so what you would do is go ahead and spray, and there's several things that you actually could use. You know, so you could maybe try permethrin or another garden spray to see if that helps. But I think you're probably seeing a flea beetle.
Yeah. I've sprayed it a couple of times, you know, 2 weeks apart.
What did you spray with?
It was 7. And then I was going to spray with the Orso fruit and vegetable next. And I can spray next week. That'll be 3 times, 2 weeks apart each time. But it's not knocking them at all.
Okay. I mean, that's all you can really do. Are the beetles on the plants itself?
No, they're just, they get inside the silk, go down into the corn. Okay,
so you can't really, and it might be the reason you're not getting them or whatever is feeding on them is because they're protected inside those ears. And I'd hate, right. You can't use a systemic. And so I don't know what to tell you at this point, because once they're under those ears of corn or the leaves protecting it, there's really not a lot you can do.
Okay. Do they live in the ground? Do you know?
They overwinter in debris.
Okay. We don't have any of that, so. Yeah, I had them a little bit last year, but this year they're just, I mean, every ear of corn.
Do you rotate when you plant?
I do.
Okay. Maybe skip a year and see if you can knock out the population. I mean, if you have farmers around you growing corn, that could be problematic because they could be coming in from there. But I might skip a year and see if you can just make them move on if there's not a food source for them in your garden.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that I knew it wasn't a worm. It's these little black bugs. So I appreciate the help.
Thank you so much for calling. And you are listening to the KSL Greenhouse Show. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. The number that you can call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a desert garden and what you can do if you want to put together a desert garden where it doesn't need to be watered. We actually have a video that you can see as well. So we hope that you will stay with us and check out our tips for desert gardening and our fun video that you can find on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.